All right. We're going to get started. We want to respect everybody's time. Welcome to the Treasure to Treasure Forum. My name is Lori Sheldon. I am from the city of Kentwood, which is on the west side of the world, of the mitten. I sit on the MMTA board. I am the secretary. And this morning we have three amazing panelists joining us. So I'm going to jump to Joe, then Marianne, and then Brett, if you guys would just introduce yourself and where you're from.
Sure. I'll go first. Hi, everybody. I'm Joe Snyder. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the City of Rochester Hills. It's nice to be with you all today, and looking forward to having a good conversation on a couple items.
I'm Marianne Saxon. I'm the Vice Director of Treasury for the City of Mount Pleasant. And even more so, we're together in person at some point in time. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to jump in just for a second, Lori, and ask people if you haven't muted your microphones, that would be awesome if you can mute it. We are getting just a little bit of feedback.
Thank you. Brett?
Hi, Brett Padgett, treasurer for Comstock Charter Township down in Kalamazoo County. Just finishing up my first year on the board, and I'm the director of legislation.
Great. Thank you. So we've got a great panel today. We've been doing this every month. I think this is our fifth month. I lost track. But each month we ask that the members just submit some questions. Our panel tries to go through and answer what they can and give some of their ideas and their experiences. If you do have another question you'd like us to address, please just throw it into the chat. If you'd like to say something, just raise your hand, and I'd love to hear from everybody as well. We want to keep this interactive and yet educational at the same time. And we would like to make sure that we get done right on time so that we can respect everybody's time. So we're going to go ahead and start. We've got about 18, 19 questions. And so the first question I'm going to hand over to Janelle and Shelley from Dovetail Solutions to answer, and this is regarding our Advanced Institute and how we are going to be going forward with that this year. So, ladies?
Oh, thanks, Lori. You know, Randy was apologetic that she couldn't be here today to talk about the changes that the board have made to both of the institutes, but she asked us to kind of cover for her. If you have already signed up for Basic or Advanced Institute, you have gotten an email explaining some of the changes. You guys know we're in a pandemic. This is horrible. We wanted so desperately to be able to have Advanced and Basic in December and even winter workshop in January, but we've transitioned all those into like a fall and winter training session. So for Advanced Institute, we are going to be offering online classes where everybody can still earn up to 10 points of education. We are working out those details. This is only a pandemic-related situation. Trust me, the board is very excited for everybody to be in the same room and still learn and do things like that. We're missing it, obviously, and we still have the April Advanced Institute on the books. So that is our goal, to be able to get back to that. Stay tuned for all the great classes that we'll have in the next few months. We're going to try to separate them into bite-sized pieces a couple hours at a time, just to make it a lot easier for people to take that time out of their day and be able to participate in that training. It's going to be a great deal, though. If you sign up as an advanced attendee, you're going to get a lot of bang for your buck. So hopefully that sounds good to everybody. Again, we apologize for not being able to meet in person. We were all looking forward to that. And then as far as Basic Institute goes, we're going to kind of do a hybrid. So we will be shifting that's one thing I need to say to you about both institutes. We're just shifting everybody's registration to the new program that we're transitioning to. You'll still have an opportunity to cancel that if you want to, if that's not something that you're interested in anymore, for a full refund. But to get back to Basic Institute, we will be transitioning that to a hybrid program where about five classes or so will be online before Basic meets in April. We will not be meeting in December like we had wanted to, but we will meet in April. Those dates, I believe, are the 26th through 29th. what we're going to try to do for basic is kind of shorten that up a little bit to give people a little break on the expenses, and hope that a couple fewer days in the classroom will help out everybody's budgets. So instead of going from Sunday to Friday, we'll go Monday noon until Thursday noon for basic folks. Again, that's 26th through 29th. And anybody who's registered for that has gotten a very detailed email. All this information is also online on the website. You can go through and click on it for all that information. Hopefully that makes sense. Shelley, did I miss any big points, or does that cover it?
I think the only other thing that we'd like to add is that this new fall and winter online training opportunity is going to be open to everyone. So even if you have not graduated with your MICPT and typically would be able to take advantage of Advanced Institute, you are welcome to sign up for any of the online training programs that we will be offering. We'll be offering them as single sessions, or you can actually take the bundle and sign up for everything. Like Janelle said before, is we've offered the bundle as a great savings opportunity. You almost get a couple of classes at no cost at all. And that was the incentive even for advanced folks to take the full module of the online learning so they get all 10 plus more points towards their recertification. So, and I know that we're going to continue to send emails and we'll send class descriptions and costs. Like Janelle had mentioned, we're going to do bite-sized pieces, probably do like two classes a month, maybe three. But I think we have nine online training programs that we're putting together for all of you. So we're excited about that.
The only question that just popped up was, is it too late to register? And no, it is definitely not too late to register. So stay tuned for more information coming. Yes. Thank you to our association managers. They have put this together in record time, and we're actually super excited to be able to offer training virtually to make sure that we're all staying connected and we're all having that opportunity to continue learning. Because I don't know about you, but I definitely am in withdrawal of of our education portion of our association. So this will be super exciting. All right, thank you. So the next question is regarding, I'll read the question. So how are you managing your community's investment portfolio with the drop in interest rates? So let's start with Brett, and then after Brett, Marianne, and Joe, if you would all just give your feedback on how you are handling this.
Sure. Well, here at Comstock, I really haven't done much differently yet because I already have several CDs that are obviously much higher because I bought them prior to all this happening. But as those mature, depending on what the rates are at the time, if I can get higher than what our normal bank is offering, I may go out longer. I've heard recently, I don't know if it's just talk or what, that interest rates may stay at zero for quite a long time. So anything you can lock in that's higher than that for longer, or anything, speaking for myself, that's what I'm going to look for. I do have some investment pool stuff as well that's still higher than what I call cash. I call my bank cash. It's still higher than cash. And then I've got part of my portfolio as well that's in asset-backed securities, which are longer term. Most of my stuff is short just based on our situation here. I've got to stay pretty liquid. But that's what I'm doing.
Thank you. Marianne?
Okay. Last year in July, I went with a RFP for investment advisor, and was rolling along very well. And then along came the pandemic, and a lot of the treasuries and things that I have purchased that were callable have all been called. So my rates sank tremendously, and to find something to reinvest those in has been a challenge. So just like when we rolled through this before, we're living with things that are just a little bit north of zero, and not a whole lot you can do. So we're just rolling with it, I guess you would say, and keeping relatively short because who knows what the longer-term rates are going to be. And currently the ICS product that I have from our local bank hasn't adjusted there, so I've got quite a little bit in the ICS until they adjust their rates downward, and then I'll have to look for other places to park cash. And plus, with not knowing how our budget is, it makes it very difficult to do cash flow analysis of how long you can put money out, because future budgets are going to be a challenge too. So this is definitely challenging times, but we'll get through.
Thank you. Joe?
Hi. Hi, everybody. Well, yeah, actually, similar to Brett, last, really, it was about a year or so ago, over the last couple months, you know, leading up to December, kind of got some longer-term things. Obviously, you have to stick with what your investment guidelines are, so you can't go longer than what your parameters or your investment policy is. I agree. I think rates are going to be low and low for a long time. The Fed Chief Powell stated, you know, they're not even thinking about raising rates anytime soon. And if you just look at some of the where the U.S. Treasuries are at, you know, 1 to 2 year, you're talking, you know, just north of 10 basis points. You know, up to 5 years, about 20, 25 basis points. You got to go even all the way up to a 10-year is, you know, in the 60, 70 basis points. And these are just kind of unheard of from what we were sitting here about a year ago. So, you know, really my philosophy is it's really the Sly method, safety, liquidity, yield. You have to put safety absolutely number one first. Then, you know, you can determine your liquidity that you need. The yield just, you know, as you're getting a nice, you know, CD that was giving you 2% and then it comes due, you're not going to come anywhere near that. So, you know, definitely want to be very safe in these times. Commercial paper, you know, it was one of those things I really used to like to invest in, but now when you're talking 5, 10 basis points for a piece of commercial paper versus a U.S. Treasury, it's just, it's really not worth the stretch to go that way. So one place I have found that you can actually get some good deals, and I do see there's a couple bankers on here, is sometimes with the CDs. You can actually get, you know, 20, 30, 40 basis points on a CD with some of our banks in the area. You know, certainly make sure you do your research that they're good banks. I'm not sure if Greg Prost from Robinson Capital's on here, but he's got an excellent kind of a bank overview that he sends out quarterly. So if you're not on that list, it is good to be on that list because it gives basically a letter grade for each of the banks. So that way, you know, you're doing a little bit of your due diligence. And maybe another thing I'm going to talk about banks is, and I know there are some bankers on here, feel free to prod them for an extra 2, 3, 4, 5 basis points on top of whatever. You know, good guys like, you know, Ben Stone might give you an extra couple basis points here or there, but certainly feel free to work as hard as you can to get whatever you can get. I guess maybe, you know, it is difficult in these days setting up your budgets, especially, you know, what is my investment income going to be? All I can tell you that this is what I've done. I've basically projected ultra low, knowing that, you know, just like maybe 10 basis points, okay, I think I can get this, mainly so I'm not stretching and investing in something you shouldn't be investing in. So just bring that bar really, really low for yourself and just do the best you can. I'm really not looking out super long on things, even though this could be a long time because, you know, two basis points for picking a 2-year versus a 1-year treasury. And then the grand scheme of things, it's probably not that big of a deal, but you know, just safety first is what I would advise, and lower your budgets for what you think your investment revenue is going to be.
Thank you. There was a question in the chat as well. Just a second, I'm trying to find it. It was regarding security in the environment. If I can't find it. If anybody has any worries about the security in this environment right now from our panel.
I can touch on that. I don't really have too much issue with security of the U.S. Treasury. You're basically good there. The U.S. government can just print off a couple more dollars and you'll be fine there. CDs, maybe a little bit. You know, you do have to look at your banks and the bank's strengths. That's why I like the reports that come out with the Robinson Capital bank ratings. That gives me a little bit more security. Commercial paper, you know, you have to kind of keep in the highest realms, like A1 plus, and they have to be highly rated. But even that is no guarantee. You can also go with, there's several different pool, investment pool options that are available to us in the state of Michigan. That kind of helps to hedge your risk a little bit on those. So really sticking with whatever you feel is safe. Nobody's really going to chide you too much for your investment income being low. You can just point to what all the different investment rates are out there. But if you put it in something trying to make an extra couple basis points and you lose money, you'll never hear the end of it, and you might not have a job. So stay safe.
Thank you. All right, let's jump over to the next question is regarding how are you budgeting for revenues from the state of Michigan, including state shared revenue in Act 51? So let's see. Would you mind starting with that, Marianne?
Sure. Actually, we're in our budget process right now because we have a fiscal year that's the same as this calendar year. And for our 2021 budget, we use the state's projections for state shared revenue. And, of course, they don't go through the entire year. And that's the best we can do at this point, holding them flat going into 2021 for the part that the state hasn't identified. But yesterday, if any of you were on the Treasury webinar, they gave some pretty good news about what state shared revenue could look like after their August Census Committee meeting. And withholding taxes are up about 4%, and sales taxes are down about 9%, which is less than what they anticipated in May. So I was feeling a little bit positive about those. But they did warn that those are not long-term things that they think will continue. Withholding taxes are up, in particular because of the unemployment that people were receiving and the extra $600 from the feds. So some people were making more on unemployment than they were as wage earners, and that is taxed, so the withholdings are up. And then sales tax, they indicated those were up because of people buying more durable goods than they were buying Tiger tickets or some service things that you just can't do right now. So they don't think that model is going to be sustained. So what we've been telling our folks all along is in taxable values and state shared revenue that we're comfortable right now, but our storm is going to hit later than what it's hit our local businesses. So that's what we're doing for our state shared revenue projections. Act 51, the Michigan Department of Transportation has been putting out projections for those, so we're just using what the state is projecting and hoping for the best. And also yesterday in the Treasury, they had a budget person on there, and they indicated that the state's going to end up 2020 better than what they anticipated. So 2021 is looking more positive to them, so that made me feel a little bit better about what our possibility for statutory revenue sharing going into 2021 anyways is.
Brett, do you have anything you want to add to that?
No, that was well said. That's what we're doing, just following the state's projections and keeping up on it. Townships don't get the Act 51 portion, so we don't have to worry about that. But for the constitutional, we're just taking the state's recommendation and following along as they go, checking it weekly.
Joe, anything else?
No, I think Marianne did a great job explaining it. The webinars that the Department of Treasury puts on, this was one of the better ones that I've been a part of. They've laid a lot of information out there. All I can say, you can go out to the Act 51 website and see what that might look like for your community. You can go out to the state shared revenue, click on your community and see what are projected there. All I would say is I take maybe some of that with a grain of salt because they are just complete estimates. I know there's a lot of economists from all over that help to put those numbers together. So depending on how conservative maybe you want to be with your revenue guesstimates, you can take those numbers and maybe, take 5-10% off of there just to ensure yourself that, you're not going to have a budget shortfall at the end of the year because you didn't get as much state shared revenue or Act 51 as you thought. So that's kind of what we're doing in Rochester Hills, taking those numbers and then, okay, I'm going to knock 5-10% off of those just so I have a higher confidence level that we'll be able to hit those. And then I can come in at the end of the year and say, hey, look, we got more in Act 51 or state shared revenue than what we thought, and everybody's kind of high-fiving. So that's kind of how we're doing it in Rochester Hills.
Awesome. Brett, you should share the link in the chat. What was the link? Do you want to tell everybody what the link is for?
Sure. That's just to find out. Most people probably have been there before, but that's just to see the, your estimated revenue sharing payments.
Great. Thank you.
That's all.
The next question is along the same lines, but it, the question says, August revenue sharing. From what I understand, it is being reimbursed through the Federal CARES Act. However, you must justify the money with eligible COVID expenses. Since there is no stay-at-home order, our police department wages would not be considered eligible expenses. What are other municipalities doing regarding the loss, and does anyone have a list of eligible COVID expenses? Brett, can I start with you on this one?
Sorry about that. I was muted. There was a fire truck going by, actually. Perfect timing. So we don't have our own police. We do contract with the county. I don't have a list of eligible expenses. I know we've submitted for reimbursement for our fire department, and we haven't received that portion yet. But as far as the August revenue sharing replacement, we did receive that money, and we put it into the account that they said. But I still haven't seen any info on reporting. I know you're supposed to fill out some reports, but I haven't seen them yet. Hopefully somebody else has. Sorry, I don't have as much to offer on this question.
So what is your experience?
Actually, at the Michigan Department of Treasury's webinar yesterday, they kind of reiterated that point several times. The state construes that, public public safety, basically their Michigan State Patrol officers are eligible with those. And if the Michigan Department of Treasury, who I know are their real sticklers for the rules, if they consider that police is an eligible expense, and police and fire, then, well, that so do I. So we received our portion, the last day in August. We deposited in our fire department, similar to Brett with Comstock. We do not have, in Rochester Hills, our own police department. We contract through the Oakland County Sheriff's Office instead. So since we don't actually pay those employees, we're not eligible to use it for that. However, we do have our own fire department, and we do pay our fire department payroll. So that's basically what we're using it for. I deposited the money in the fire fund, and we'll be, basically reporting that as soon as the Department of Treasury comes out with some forms and things like that. I think at the webinar yesterday, they said near the end of the month they would have, basically a form of some kind for you to fill out. The only thing I would caution, if you did or if your community did participate in the public health, public safety payroll reimbursement program or the hazard pay program, just make sure you're not double dipping, because I think that took the months of April and May. So you don't want to, take this money and also charge it to April and May. You might want to try, June to July or something like that.
Marianne, have you guys done anything different?
A little bit. We have a police department, so we have police and fire, and I submitted our police and fire payroll for those months under the Public Safety, Public Health Payroll Reimbursement Program, but did that with a little bit of caution because we are not going to get an answer from Treasury definitively because they are walking a pretty gray line as far as whether this is federally approved or not. And that's my opinion anyway. But like Joe said, the state has taken the position that Michigan State Police qualify as public safety for CARES Act funding, and that's about the only guidance we're going to get from Treasury, and it's up to your local government to decide whether your departments were responding to COVID. And they're giving the example that Treasury is determining that MSP was responding to COVID, and therefore it was appropriate CARES Act funding. So we have about $750,000 in that public safety, public health payroll reimbursement program that we requested funding for. At the webinar yesterday, they indicated that the applications were, where's my figure, $350 million, and they have $200 million available. So we are not going to get reimbursed 100%. It's going to be prorated. At best, it looks at about 58% of that right now. So the August state shared revenue replacement, you could use that for the percentage that you aren't going to get reimbursed for your public safety, public health payroll. Or if it's not enough, then if it qualified for public safety, public health, then I believe you could use it in a different month to substantiate your state shared revenue replacement funds. I had a meeting with the city manager this morning, and I indicated to her that this has to go through state auditors and federal auditors before this is all going to be approved as an appropriate use of the Federal CARES Act funding. So we don't want to spend that knowing it could be clawed back. I mean, that's probably a long shot, but we are going to put that in our assigned fund balance in our audit, in our budgets, until we get a definitive answer that these are going to be qualified expenditures before we go and spend that money. And as Joe indicated, there are some forms you're going to need to fill out. Treasury is behind in getting those forms ready. They indicated yesterday that would be September 23rd that they're going to get those forms out, and then they have to be a real quick turnaround. First of all, you have to accept it, even though we've already got our money, we have to accept it. And then after that, you have to prove that you spent it in an appropriate manner, and they laid out some time frames of when you have to prove those expenditures, and it's quarterly. So there'll be more information to come. It's just Treasury indicated that they have 7 employees working on right now. They're working on the first responders pay, the premium pay, and they just can't even get through all that work. And so they've grabbed 30 more employees from other areas, and they're just really swamped. So they've been promising a lot of things to us, and I believe they're going to come through on those promises. It's just they're buried. So I guess it's just be patient and cautious. But I don't believe we're ever going to get a list saying, yes, this qualifies, or no, this doesn't qualify.
I think patient and cautious are the key words. One of the questions Marlene Lott had put on the chat was, Star City had very little impact from COVID, so their expenses have been masks, signs, sanitizer, and she's curious to know whether that money is going to have to be returned. Does anyone on our panel have an idea or an indication on if that could be a possibility?
From what I understand of it, yes. Yeah, whatever you get that you can't substantiate back, that this is what you spent it on, you'll be responsible to send back. I think that's one of the reasons we put it in our fire department, because I can go through that, you know, CARES Act money in no time, putting fire payroll and other things there. And also that's where a lot of, probably the bulk of our PPE and all those sorts of expenses all hit, so.
All right, thank you. Okay, our next question is, we have a resident who cannot qualify for the Step Forward Michigan due to a technicality. SFM recommended working with our county treasurer through a new pay-as-you-stay program, HB 5124. It was enacted in March of 2020. Both the county treasurer and I have read over the bill, and there's a lot to digest and understand. Is there a more clear, less complicated explanation of this bill? We want very much to help this resident. Okay, Brett, this one's for you.
at our last county treasurer's meeting, I think it was our last one, our county treasurer actually showed us a PowerPoint from the Wayne County treasurer that kind of went through all the guidelines and put together a little sheet, and I can share it on my screen if you'd like. I can't. Well, I'll make sure that it goes out onto our website, however that happens. But it's a nice little, there's a taxpayer guide that kind of walks you through how you qualify, and then there's a PowerPoint that explains it step by step. So hopefully that will help everyone understand the program. In Kalamazoo County, I just sent a list of my parcels to the county treasurer, and they look it over, and they tell me if anyone qualifies. Unfortunately, no one qualified from my unit, but I know that there's a couple more people from Kalamazoo I see on there. Maybe they can speak to it as well, or if there's any county treasurers on here. But
okay. So we'll definitely
I'll make sure that gets out.
Okay, great. Thank you. Let's see, we do have something in the chat that says our county treasurer said they don't want to do pay as you stay, saying the difference would be a charge back to the local unit. So
that's correct.
I think So everybody's going to kind of probably handle it a little bit differently throughout the state. So Okay, next question. We'll start with Joe. Can you give a clear answer what Metro Act money can be spent on?
Well, sure. There's probably the best place to go would be to the Michigan Department. I'm not sure actually where it's at, but it's Public Act 48 of 2002 kind of defines how this basically each community is allocated with the Metro monies. I can give you an example of a lot of the different stuff that we throw at it, and we've been doing this for probably ever since 2002. I've never really gotten questioned on any of it. Basically, it has to be money spent, you know, maintaining, preserving the right-of-ways underneath where the electrical lines go, and they pay you per square foot on that. It goes into a pool, and they send out the communities, okay, maintain your right-of-way. So here's an example, some examples of stuff that we've been doing with it. Basically, anything that had to do with tree maintenance along the right-of-ways there, dust control, shoulder mowing, any plant health care in your boulevards and things like that, any irrigation system maintenance, starting them up, shutting them down, the water, street lighting, road striping, and the big one, which spends every last dollar of it that we have and then some, is snow removal. So if snow removal is a qualifying thing, then that's, you know, especially here in Michigan, that's usually a pretty easy thing. So we try to knock out some of the higher priority things of it. I mean, certainly the tree maintenance and plant health care and irrigation and things. And then whatever's left, we just use the balance towards snow plowing.
Anything else, Brett?
I was just going to say, I actually contacted the Metro Authority when I saw this question, and they sent me a spreadsheet that kind of details a lot of what Joe was talking about. They list blighted trees, dust control, street lights, street light installation, snow removal, maintenance of unimproved areas, so trimming and cutting of trees and the like, construction and maintenance of sidewalks and bike paths within the right-of-way, non-commercial telecom facilities, signage, equipment purchased strictly for the right-of-way purposes, and then purchasing and planting of new trees, and then some other things. So again, I can make sure that this spreadsheet gets out there. Word document, not spreadsheet. So hopefully that's helpful. I just went over through the highlights, but there's much more detail. I'll share it.
Thank you. Great. All right. Our next question was regarding the payroll tax relief in respect to the employment tax deadlines. We weren't quite exactly sure what this question was asking, but what we think it was regarding was the opt-out that we just had to do regarding the taxes. So I was going to have Mary Ann kind of touch on that. We talked about it together a little bit prior to and just explain what we were thinking that this question was regarding to. Mary Ann?
Okay. We assume this question was in regards to the payroll tax holiday that was recently announced by the president, and then on August 28th, the IRS actually issued guidelines on what that payroll tax holiday would be, and that's in regards to the Social Security, the 6.2% that we pay as an employee and as an employer. The guidance from Treasury indicated that it was an option for employers to do. Here in the city of Mount Pleasant, we decided not to do that option. We didn't feel it was in the best interest of our employees, recognizing that some of our employees are having some financial difficulties in their family. But this is a deferral. You don't pay it for September through December, but January through April, I believe it is, next year, you'd have to pay double. So we indicated to our employees that we didn't think it was in their best interest or the city's best interest, because if the employee leaves, they're going to have to pay it all lump sum. And you have some employees who are cyclical that are working now, but they may not be working in January. And it just, there was too many unknowns and ambiguities in the IRS letter. And after careful consideration and a consultation with our payroll attorney, we decided to opt out of it. And so far we haven't had any backlash. We just let our employees know that last Friday. We are allowing people to take 457 and 401 loans if they want, and we indicated that we thought was a better option for folks if they were having financial difficulty than taking advantage of this payroll holiday. And the other thing that was going to be difficult with the payroll holiday, too, is it wasn't a one-size-fits-all. Some employees may have wanted it. Some employees would have really not wanted it, and we wouldn't be able to accommodate it. Was it all in or all out?
Thank you. Next question is regarding how many offices are still closed, if you're still paying employees, and if you're closed, how are you helping your residents? So Mary Ann and Joe both, if you guys could address this. We'll start, Mary Ann, if you wouldn't mind doing this one again.
Okay. We have been open since the stay-home order was lifted. The first week we were open by appointment only, and then after that we've had our doors wide open. We require folks to wear masks. We have tape on the floor, social distancing, and we're just doing the best to clean and sanitize and keep our employees social distancing when they can. It's been a little difficult. We've had some new employees starting, and it's hard to train a new employee when you can't be more than 6 feet apart. Before CMU students returned to Mount Pleasant, we had a relatively low risk in our community. Now that they've come back, we've quickly spiked to a high risk, so it's made us a little bit nervous. But we're just sticking to our same guiding principles of following the CDC recommendations to mitigate our risk and trying to serve our residents the best way that way. And I think as the election gets closer and closer, it'll be harder and harder for us to serve our residents remotely. So we're trying to do the best we can, keeping our employees safe and our residents safe as they come into our building.
Joe?
Sure. Here in Rochester Hills, I think it was right after the executive order came out, I remember working from home on St. Patrick's Day, and I couldn't go out to the bar. So that's kind of my frame of reference there. our city hall was closed through, I think it was the first week in June, and then we started phasing back in. So basically from mid-March to mid-June, we were basically, unless you were a firefighter or a DPW guy that was out on the roads, you were working remotely. So since then, we have been back in the office. I'm working actually remotely today. Rochester Community Schools is a virtual school, so a couple days a week I try to work from home to help out my wife and things and help out with kids. But those two, 3 months, that was actually a good amount of time for us because what we did is we got together a little committee of employees. It was called the Back to Work Committee. And they came up with all the different safety protocols and things that we wanted in the buildings. For example, like the sneeze guards and the markers on the floor and the tape around and the cords and things where people could go and were not supposed to go. A lot of that stuff was a little difficult to procure. In my job as chief financial officer, not only do I have treasury, but I have purchasing, budget, and accounting. So I know for a fact, our purchasing department was working constantly trying to get sanitization equipment, safety protocols, and all those things in. So it actually helped giving us a little bit of a buffer time where there wasn't a lot of, well, there was no public in the building to get some of those things going. We did pay our employees, the vast majority of our employees, we paid in full throughout. We had a handful, maybe 10 to 20, that were not able to perform the duties listed in their job description remotely. If you could perform the duties of your job description, then you got full pay. But for example, like our treasury clerk, one of her main pieces of her job, about half of her job is sitting taking funds from the public that comes in. She was one that we had to make some arrangements with because she wasn't able to perform all those duties. But now everybody, the furlough is over, everybody's back and working safe. We've got all the PPE and stuff that we could need, sanitization equipment. The Clorox wipes, I guess, are still hard to come by. But, we're back and doing the best that we can.
Has anyone seen a decrease in foot traffic in their offices?
I'd say yes, slightly. Maybe not hugely significant, but yeah, it's certainly less. during the time that City Hall was closed, we really did a lot of information push, especially out of our website, Facebook pages and things like that, letting folks know all the different ways that they could still do business with the city, whether it be as simple as paying a water bill. You could even, you know, pull a permit for, you know, a new water heater and things like that. So that was actually, I think, one, hard to say anything good came of this COVID, but it did get a lot of people out to our website to find different ways to do things. So now a contractor that's just going to replace a water heater doesn't have to come into City Hall, pull a permit, go do the job. He can do it all from his office, or her, it sure could be a female plumber, but they can do it all from their office, quick and easy. It's much more seamless for us on the administrative end, and it's quicker, safer, and everything. So really pushing the online presence to do business. As well, we have a city Dropbox out in front of our City Hall where people are welcome to put in their payments or anything else, and we check it, you know, a couple times a day.
How about you?
Yeah, we've seen a slight decrease, but we did shorten our hours, so it's more concentrated. So it probably is more than what I think it is, the reduced foot traffic. But also I found this week we've been getting a lot of calls asking how they can pay their tax payments before the due date if we're not open. So I think people just assumed we were closed all this time, but we've been fully open to the public since June. So, and it's been on the website. I even changed it on Google to show our new hours. So I'm not sure why they didn't know we were open, but circling back, yes, we've seen a slight reduction in foot traffic.
Marianne?
Yeah, it depends on the department. We did, too, while we were closed down, increased our online presence, and most people who were using the online presence when we were closed continue to do so. So we do see a lot of more electronic transactions. What I'm completely shocked about is that for the August election, and as we're gearing up here for November, how many of our elderly folks are coming in to request their ballots? It's like you could have dropped it in the drop box. I know the mail is not always trusted at this point, but we've seen a great uptick around the election. But other than those, the other routine services that we offer, we've seen a decrease.
I'm going to jump into one other thing here. Paul Lynn did put a reminder on here that each qualified local unit must register with the federal system for award management prior to submitting the CRLGG grant opening certification. So I know that there's a lot going on in the chat right now, so I just want to make kind of throw a few things on there if we do see something that's relevant to everybody. Next, does anyone here, I think Brett and Joe, both of you said that you could speak to this, have a remote work policy or are developing one? Brett, let's start with you.
Sure. So correction, I thought we had a remote work policy, but we do not. We just have a sheet that you fill out when you work from home detailing what you did and what hours you worked, that sort of thing. But we don't have an official written work from home policy, which I thought we did.
Joe, do you guys have one?
You know, I guess it wouldn't go as far as saying a formal policy, but what we do have, so here in Rochester Hills, we are, our local school system is 100% virtual, which really left a lot of parents in the lurch. So, and they made that announcement beginning of August. So what we did is basically put together, I hate calling it a policy, but maybe more of a procedure, that basically gives employees flexibility to be able to, if they can do their jobs remotely, you know, work from home a couple days a week. The one caveat that they did say, this is a temporary policy. This basically is in effect as long as the schools, at least our local school systems, are basically virtual. As soon as the kids start going back to school, then it'll start getting phased out. The only exceptions to that would be almost a case-by-case basis. If a particular employee, you know, cares for an elderly parent or something like that, they have a special need, or perhaps they have an underlying condition, then those sorts of things were kind of taken on a case-by-case basis. But at least for now, nothing formal, basically for the days beyond COVID, which we'll eventually get there. But at least for this time being that we're working in right now, yeah, we're trying to give employees flexibility to do what they can. Ultimately, it's really up to the director's discretion it works a lot easier to work remotely for some folks than the others. Firefighters certainly can't work remotely, so they're kind of exempt from that. But, you know, some of the accounting staff, you know, they can certainly do a good chunk of their job remotely just as easily as they can if they were, you know, sitting in City Hall.
Thank you. I'm going to actually jump in and ask Mike Pettigrew. He mentioned that he does have one. Can you share a little bit, Mike?
Yes. So when this all started, our HR department got pretty on the ball in putting together what would be a temporary telework agreement for each employee. And I was instructed by our city administrator to send home as many people as we could. We were open throughout in that we had workers in the building from St. Patrick's Day forward. But as many of them as I could get to work from home, the agreement with each individual basically states where you're going to work from. So, I mean, just listing as simple as their home address. Where are you going to work in your house? You've identified that, you know, I've got a kitchen table, I've got a computer, kind of just making someone go through the steps of thinking about what you need to work from home. We have some people, even so fast forward to now, City Hall is open. You have to go through a health screening and you must wear a mask. We will deny service to anyone who doesn't wear a mask. Fortunately, so far, we've only had one person who didn't want to comply, and they were escorted out of the building. They're a repeat customer for, they're one of those agitators, let's say. They're a known agitator of city council and the administration and everything like that. I'll echo the words of our city administrator, which I agree with completely, which is if we don't learn a new normal from this whole experience, then we've really lost an opportunity. Just like you said, you know, I've got two or three people working in the office in our customer service area. We're answering phones from home, all the city lines. I know we're blessed with a lot of resources, but we seemed uniquely prepared for this event to take place, and it just shoved, you know, a number of projects would have taken years to implement, and it just shoved them into about 3 months. So we're able to answer phones from home. We can do just about everything we need to from home, and we're developing long-term policies because I believe that when this particular pandemic is over, you're going to have an opportunity to repurpose some of these things. Working from home is good for the environment. It's good for gas. You know, it's a little bit of a pay raise because you're not paying for gas and lunch and everything to go out. So it's a benefit to people that, you know, we can provide now that we've learned how to do it. So we have a temporary policy in place. We're working towards implementing as much of this as we can long term, you know, and just have the right number of people in City Hall. You know, I read an article today, and I'll just end on this, that, you know, snow days in schools are probably going to go away because now that you've learned to work from home on a nice day, you can work from home on a crappy day too. So that's just my message, is that be creative, try to find ways to work from home, because it's going to be something that's with us for a long time.
Thanks, Mike. Brett, I'm going to jump to you for some update on our deferred summer tax bill.
I know everyone was excited to hear that it's all finished, but there's really nothing new to report. I spoke to Judy Allen yesterday after a work group she had, and there's still nothing confirmed for a deferment. She said the sponsor, Senator McGregor, is still insistent that he wants to provide some relief. I don't know how that would be implemented at this point when a lot of the city's due dates have passed and the townships are approaching, and there's nothing in the statute that lets us give a refund. So stay tuned, I guess. Hopefully it's done and it's just gone, but as long as he wants to continue, they're going to keep having work groups and try to work something out.
Has there been any conversation about anything hitting winter?
There was. She said there was in passing, but nothing definite. But her feeling is that there will be something done for the winter as well.
Okay. How about veterans exemptions? There was a question regarding if this is going to be brought before the legislature this year to have the adjustments go through Treasury.
Oh, I'm sorry, I missed the first part of that. I was reading the chat.
For veterans exemptions.
Oh, yes, I spoke to her about that as well. She said that they were in talks earlier this year until the pandemic hit, and she said there's no way the state's going to take on the financial burden when they don't even know what their own budget's going to look like. So it's kind of on the back burner until this is all done. That was the short version of the conversation. It's not okay. Lost. It's not lost, and they want to take it up, but she said there's no they're not even going to approach the state at this point because they won't put themselves into a deeper hole.
Okay. A question that kind of popped up is, I know Andrea from Wyoming said that her council passed a resolution to suspend interest and penalty, and there was actually someone else on chat that just mentioned the exact same thing. Has anyone else had this experience?
In the city of Mount Pleasant, our taxes are due July 31st by charter, and so our city commission decided to waive that charter provision from July 31st through September 14th. But we took the position that after September 14th, we didn't have any jurisdiction over that interest, that it was a state law that required that interest to be put on at that time. And so we have made no adjustments. And going on to the next question that's on here about what about some of the businesses who are having difficulty paying, I've been responding to them that there's nothing that we can do locally because we can't trump state law, but you can make partial payments, and the interest rates are 1%, 2%, and explain the interest rate structure. But I don't believe that locals have the authority to change that interest that's provided in the state law.
Interestingly enough, our city commission last year passed a resolution that stated that we will not relieve interest and penalty because we've had so many different taxpayers come forward. And obviously, as a treasurer, you don't have that ability to make that decision. And so we requested that there be something put into a resolution. So that question has come up, but then it would reverse what they just did as well. So let's kind of jump back to the municipalities, how you're handling the conversations with commercial taxpayers that are being hit the hardest. Brett or Joe, have either of you had any conversations with your taxpayers on what to do?
I've only had one commercial taxpayer call and ask, and they asked specifically about the bill that would extend the property tax due date. And I explained to him that he could follow along where to find the bill, and really there's nothing going on at this point. He owns a couple of hotels in the township. But really I think somebody mentioned this in the chat too, but we're ahead of where we were last year as far as tax collections go. I'm not sure why that is, but we've been really busy this week too with walk-ins. So we really haven't had much discussion with commercial customers here in Comstock Township, just the one. And he understood that it was really upon the legislature to do something.
Yeah, we actually found that one of our largest taxpayers in the city ended up getting a bridge loan to pay their taxes. And we're done with our tax collection for summer. We're past our summer due date as well. And we ended up being more positive than I expected it to be. I was quite shocked.
Yeah, in the city of Mount Pleasant, ours are usually due July 31st. And by July 31st, we're usually 90% collected. But since we still made the due date July 31st, but you didn't have to pay interest till September 14th, some people have chosen that. And I was very pleasantly surprised to find out that on July 31st, we were still 73% collected, even though there was no penalty for paying later. And then on August 31st, we were 80% collected. And as of yesterday, we were 86% collected. So we still, by the end of this week, could hit our 90% collection rate that we've hit for many years. So basically, the taxpayers, I think, that are having the difficulty are, in our community, the bars who have been shuttered since March. That's the calls that I've been getting.
We only have a couple minutes left, so I want to address a question that's on our list twice here a couple different ways, but it's regarding the Sigma electronic site and how we can get the state to improve the documents Brett, do you have any insight into this?
I spoke to Judy Allen about this as well, and she would actually like members to send her or Chris some specific examples of the lack of, I guess, description of payments. I went back and looked at mine, and last year I had a revenue sharing that had no it was nothing. It was just saying, here's your amount. But this year I find that mine are way more detailed, so I think Treasurer Eubanks listened to us at one of our conferences she was at. But Judy does have a meeting with someone at Treasury about a separate issue, and she would like to ask him about this, but she really does want some specific examples, if anybody has them, on how the state has been in the past with their descriptions. Treasury, I mean.
Okay. So if we do have some thoughts and some suggestions, please forward those on to Judy Allen. If Judy is not your representative, you could send it over to Brett as well. That's not just a township thing, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So Brett can get it to her as well.
Yeah. Or Chris Hackbarth.
Yeah. Oh, yes. That's right. Chris Hackbarth. Okay. And then let's address one more question before we wrap up here. But this one was regarding past due water bills. And the question is we have properties with past due water bills that we cannot shut them off. In addition, they've now been placed into foreclosure. According to the county, they cannot be put into current delinquency on the property, and they do not pay it. I'm sorry. So other cities going to get their past due if we shut them off, the property no longer belongs to them. They have not yet been evicted due to COVID. How are they going to take them to, are you going to take them to small claims court or write it off? Looks like, Marianne, you had some insight into that question.
Well, first of all, we hope that we will get them as a lien and it'll get paid. If there's a mortgage company, it's probably going to get paid. The other thing is there's the federal funds available to pay up to $700. It's quite a cumbersome process that you have to go through to do that. Right now, it's in the data match. You are sending information to the Department of Health, I think it is. And they're matching your customer base to the customer base of the people who get food assistance. And then once there's a match of those customers, you can decide if you want to opt into the program and have the state reimbursed for some of those past due water bills. But like I said, it's quite a cumbersome process, and I'm not for sure how the state is going to match our customer information with their customer information when we don't gather Social Security numbers or birth dates or anything like that. But we are starting to go down that path to try and see if we can get some assistance to our customers. But we, too, haven't seen a lot of more delinquencies than we have in the past. It's just the usual.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to wrap back around to one of the questions regarding the holiday payroll tax. Tim has a question regarding, do we need to physically opt out for the employees portion, or do we simply continue to tax the normal amount if they're opting out? Is anyone, how did the three of you guys handle that, our panel?
In Rochester Hills, we basically did nothing. I believe
nothing.
You
okay.
Either have to like physically opt in if you want in. If you
okay.
want to just continue as normal, just keep doing what you're doing and go keep going forward.
There's not a form though, correct?
Not that I signed.
Okay.
I sure hope not.
No, we just continue to withhold. We haven't had a payroll since September 1st, but we'll continue to withhold. But we did let our employees know that that was our plan.
Okay. Yep. We did the same. We sent a message out to the entire city staff, letting them know that we were not planning to participate. One more question that got added on really late. I know we're at the time, but did anyone handle a no contact due date? So has anyone had no contact with their customers during your due date process? Well, you guys probably have not all hit your due dates yet, correct? Marianne, you did.
But we didn't have interest on it. We've been open too, so it's not for us.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, I thank everybody for joining us today. Our next forum is going to be October 14th, so the second Wednesday in October. Thank you to Joe, Marianne, and as always, Brett. Please join us again next month. If you have questions, set them aside. We'd love to be able to try to address as much as we can. I hope you all have a wonderful day and enjoy the fall.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye, everybody.